You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up after 7, it's today's edition of Reveal. Reveal combines the power and artistry of the driveway moment and storytelling with data-rich reporting on critically important issues. That's Reveal coming up tonight at 7.
First, a recent spate of related shootings in the Madison area has residents concerned and local leaders questioning what can be done to reduce what appears to be an increase in violence.
One community leader recently outlined not one or two, but 15 steps he believes could not only help reduce violence, but also stop it before it starts.
We're joined now by Michael Johnson. He's the CEO of the Boys and Girls Club of Dane County. He wrote a 15-step approach in Madison 365. Michael, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, thanks for having me, you all.
Well, let's start with the way this violence looks. I mean, do you think there is a perception in Madison that, you know, this is Madison, violence doesn't happen here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, I would say over the last 10 years, you know, violence overall in Madison has actually decreased. And I think what's concerning to me and other leaders in this community is that when you look at some of the systemic issues that we're facing, you know, disparities in education, mass incarceration, those issues can have an impact on our city. And so when you look at these recent incidents that have occurred, we feel very strongly that we have to begin to work with the police department and come up with some innovative strategies to ensure that we keep Madison a safe city, because if we don't, what's going to happen? We're going to lose kids to other communities. Our schools are going to suffer because of it. We could potentially lose businesses, which will, you know, hurt our tax base. If our tax base is hurt because people don't feel safe, you know, in our city, public safety and other programs would be at jeopardy.
So there's a lot at stake, as you outline there. And it seems as though one of the things you're trying to do with this plan is you're calling for a coordinated approach. You want all hands on deck, everybody involved. What would be different about that compared with what you see so far?
Yeah, I see our proposal as common sense solutions. And it's not a us against them. This is a 15-point approach that came from leaders from the faith community, from nonprofits to African-American leaders, to parents of the kids that I serve at the Boys and Girls Club. So we believe that if we work in collaboration with the police department and look at programs and strategies that have been effective in other cities, that we can mitigate, you know, these risks. And I just know in the 6 years that I've been here, I have had to help bury some of these young men and look their kids in the face and figure out how to provide, you know, support to those families. And recently, you know, one of the families we just helped had this young man had four daughters. And when you see the trauma that these kids go through, when you have a parent who is struggling to bury, you know, her son, I believe we have to reach these young people early and let them know that there's opportunities in our city, opportunities in our state, in our country, and we just have to we have to create those opportunities for them. So when I think about, you know, our plan, you know, in some cases, you know, you have to look at a variety of different things. And so point three in our plan talks about, you know, offering a $10,000 reward for information that would lead to the arrest and the conviction in any homicide case. You know, the reason we put that there is a lot of times in these situations, people don't feel safe talking to law enforcement officials. And if we can partner with, you know, a local foundation that can, you know, help ease the burden for someone feeling safe and know that they may have a financial benefit to reporting a crime in our community, you know, why not, you know, put that in place? And we can't allow people to hold our communities hostage, but at the same time, I understand why people are fearful in terms of coming forward.
Right, and you also mentioned protecting those people who do come forward and making sure there's a fund to do that.
Yeah, you know, just from somebody, you know, I had a phone call recently where, you know, a young mother was fearful for her life. And, you know, I had a conversation. This is a few months ago, and I had a conversation with Chief Covo, you know, about it. And I don't know if they necessarily have all of the resources available to them, you know, to protect those families that do come forward. You got to realize if you're living in a neighborhood that's infested with gangs and drugs and, in some cases, you know, prostitution, and you have to live and work in that neighborhood, the minute you report a crime, the stakes are high, and there could be retaliation. And I think we have to give people confidence that if somebody do go forward and they do need protection, that that support is there. And right now, from what I'm hearing from people in the community, they don't feel that the police department has adequate resources to be able to provide some of that protection.
And Michael, I want to pick up on something you said a couple minutes ago. You said you want to make sure that young people know that there are opportunities out there for them. What parts of your plan address that aspect of this?
Yeah, so when I think about I was seeing 15, right? We talk about teaching children and their parents about conflict resolution strategies from a very early age. You know, when we made our announcement a couple of weeks ago, we did a skit and we brought in actors to show young people, here's how you deal with conflict in a positive way. But here's the ramifications when you deal with conflict in a negative way. When you shoot and kill someone, two lives are impacted by it, the victim and also the shooter. Because if you shoot and kill somebody, you're probably going to go to jail for a very, very long time. And then the person who is the victim loses his or her life. And so it's a lose-lose, you know, situation. The opportunity I see, and that I believe in our city, we're a large enough city but a small enough city that we can address these issues. This ain't Milwaukee and this ain't Chicago. There's about 6,000 low-income kids in Dane County. There's 5,400 businesses in our county. Why can't we secure a paid internship, paid summer internship for a lot of these young people during the summer months to keep them busy, to keep them occupied? You know, you want to keep guns off the streets of these kids. Give them a job. Let them earn, you know, a decent living. And that's what we got to do. We have to provide some hope. We got to provide some aspiration. And we got to provide, you know, opportunities for these young people. I had a young man that sent me a note the other day, and I want to read this to you. And he was critical of the plan, but I'm actually glad he sent me this message. He says, some of us have more guns than opportunities, Mr. Johnson. Some of my friends read your plan, and it's mostly all good, sir. However, the gun bag program is a joke. We ain't turning in our guns for a $100 gift certificate to Target. That's for sure. We laughed when we heard this from my older sister. I know a lot of my friends are running around with burners, which is a gun. Sometimes I want to say something, but some of my friends are impulsive. And with almost all of us not having jobs, lots of time on our hands, things can get crazy. However, he goes on to say, please don't give up on us. Some of us are dealing with the cards we are dealt, and we are trying to survive in our environment. So you think about racial disparities and employment. Almost 25% of African Americans in this community are unemployed, 16% Latino. So if we don't begin to ensure that these kids graduate from high school, be prepared for college and careers, you and I as taxpayers will pay, because these young people will grow up and become dependent on public resources. Research shows that if a young person graduates from high school, you and I would save $200,000 over that young person's lifetime. So why not make that investment right now? Why not expose these young people to opportunities? Because if we don't, the streets will become their employer of choice, because they lose hope. And when these young people lose hope and they can't find work and they're trying to make a living, the things that we are experiencing as a city will not go away magically unless we begin to address some of these systemic issues that we're seeing.
And Michael, just briefly, because I want to get some calls in on this, but I want to talk a little bit in the same vein about your first call, which is that leaders, you call them leaders associated with incidents, I assume you're talking about these maybe violent incidents, should be offered gainful employment and training opportunities to help them become productive adults. And if not, you say you can offer them a ticket out of town or more police scrutiny. But that first one, offering people involved a job, is that something you think that could be hard to sell, maybe to law enforcement and other people?
Yeah, I think it depends on what it is. And so 70% of people who are incarcerated for nonviolent offenses. If it's somebody who has taken somebody's life, somebody who has caused harm to young people, I have no sympathy for those folks. But if there's somebody who's incarcerated for a nonviolent crime, I know people who work in this community now who are productive adults. I think about people like, you know, Raphael Ragland, who's a local movie producer. I think about Anthony Cooper, who runs the Nehemiah organization for Pastor G. There are men who have gotten in trouble 10, 15 years ago, and we all make mistakes. And I think that if, with the proper intervention and the support, I would prefer to have these ex-gang members living a productive lifestyle than to give up on them and create this new generation of kids getting involved in gangs and drugs.
Michael Johnson is with us right now. He's CEO of the Boys and Girls Club of Dane County, and he recently published 15 steps that he believes the Madison community could take to reduce violence in the city.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. A focus on Madison here, but these are not issues unique to Madison. We want to hear from you. What could be done? What is being done to reduce violence, to reduce crime in your community, to provide opportunity for younger people, especially younger people from lower income communities? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're continuing our conversation about violence and how to prevent it. So looking at Madison, recent shootings here, a string of them, community wondering how to prevent it, how to solve these problems. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. You may be facing this issue in your community, whether you're in Madison or Milwaukee or elsewhere. What would you like to see implemented to reduce violence? Did you have a violent past? Were you violent as a youth yourself? How did things work out for you? What made a difference, hopefully, in your life? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Michael Johnson is with us. He's CEO of the Boys and Girls Club of Dane County, and he recently outlined 15 steps that he says can help reduce violence. And we'll take our first caller now. We've got Whitney on the line in Verona. Whitney, hi.
Hi. I am a teacher who focuses on working with students and improving their employability skills. And I really just wanted to second what Mr. Johnson was saying about providing more employment opportunities for our youth. One of the challenges that I have faced is trying to get employers to hire students who maybe have a different skill set or have a criminal record. So my question is, what does Mr. Johnson see as getting our community to buy into hiring more of our youth in this community?
Great question. Thank you for that, Michael.
Yeah, that's a great question. And we're actually doing it right now. So we received a capacity building grant from the Rennebaum Foundation, and we have encouraged. So this summer, we're putting 275 kids to work at 32 different companies, from UW Health to Sarah Cycling to Fiskars, teaching kids about the employment opportunities that exist here. We have companies like CUNA Mutual who are paying our kids over $17 an hour to get experience in their finance department. And so, one, I think you have to have somebody that can focus. So just like you have salespeople that may be selling a product, we have to have salespeople that can go out and present these opportunities for employers and to talk about what the benefits are as it relates to hiring young people from this community. So we have begun to do that. We also encourage the mayor and also the county executive. Last few years, you've heard the mayor talk about his internship program. We helped him, you know, kickstart that. We've done the same thing for the county executive. So I think if the infrastructure is built city by city, if every city in Dane County hire a somebody who focuses on that, there's no reason why we can't put all 6,000 of those low-income kids to work in the city. I think it's very, very doable. But you also have to have somebody that can match these kids appropriately and to remove barriers that may exist for young people who need these kinds of opportunities.
So, Michael, do you see some sort of community liaison working between the kids and matching them with these businesses?
Yeah, so absolutely. So I think it could be done through a local nonprofit organization. It might be done with a career officer, you know, at a school. And so I think it's more than like these kids finding jobs, but how do we introduce them to career pathways? And so I would love to see a career pathway officer in every city, whether it's through a nonprofit or at a public school, and then there's a coordinated effort throughout Dane County to help place these young people into employment opportunities. And even if it's the reason I'm pushing internships first, you have to start somewhere. And to me, these young people, first jobs need to be getting through school. But what concerns me during the summer when it gets hot, that's when you see a lot of violence occur, a lot of shootings, and when kids are out of school between the hours of 3 to 5 p.m., so keeping them engaged after school, but in particularly during the summer when they have idle time on their hands, that's what's really concerning for me. And I think our community has the capacity and I believe have the will to be able to do something like this.
And Michael, just briefly before we go to our next caller who's waiting to talk to you, you want community centers to stay open late for that purpose and we want funding for them.
Yeah, so I think we have a great asset in all of our community centers. I would love to see as part of this 15-point plan that our community centers are open on Saturdays and Sundays, that we're running, that we're open until 10 o'clock at night. But I believe most community centers would love to do it. The resources are not there to be able to do it because it's additional utility costs, additional manpower costs. But I think it's worth the investment to keep kids engaged and active until late at night. You know, for some teenagers, most kids are not going to bed until, you know, 9 or 10 o'clock at night. And so if we can keep kids off the streets and provide community centers with the appropriate, you know, transportation and navigate kids from community centers to their homes, I think we'll also continue to see our crime decrease like it has done over the years.
We're talking
but
to
if
Michael.
If we don't, our demographics are changing, and you'll see our numbers change.
Michael Johnson's with us, CEO of the Boys and Girls Club of Dane County, talking about his suggestions for reducing violence. And a quick call here from Ryan in Waukesha. Ryan, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. Just a quick thought on the connection, of course, the community with the schools, but regarding and focusing on the schools primarily, connecting students to something they're passionate about, and secondly, connecting them to a mentor that they can feel very comfortable with and identify with, are the two criteria that I think we need to do more in schools. And I know that the Madison schools right now are investigating and making some progress on creating career academies in their high schools.
Ryan, thanks a lot for that. And Michael, in our last few moments here, what do you think about that, connecting youth to passion and finding them a mentor?
Yeah, that's exactly what we do at Boys and Girls Club. We run the largest public-private partnership in both the Madison and Verona School District, and a component of our AvidTops program is to connect our kids to mentors. And as a result, you probably heard about our college signing day where we had all 124 of our kids graduated from college and announced at a press event that they were going to college. We secured over $1 million for these kids. They're going to 31 different colleges and universities, and we believe because of the support we put in place to support these young people with mentors, that they're going to go on and do great things. And so he is spot on.
Michael,
the fact that you got organizations like Big Brothers and Big Sisters who do great work, they need mentors to step up. There's a waiting list.
And we got to leave it there, Michael. I really appreciate your time today. That was Michael Johnson, CEO of the Boys and Girls Club of Dane County, and he joined us there to talk about steps that he believes can help reduce violence.
I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.